Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment. Visionaries Global Media, envisioning excellence on a global scale.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the 5 Rounds Podcast, the only podcast out there with a cardio for those deep water championship rounds, and we certainly needed that cardio today. I am Mags, and with me as always, or well, not as always, but 2 weeks in a row, which is a shock, my son Carlos. Carlos, how are you?
Tired.
Yeah, it's been a long, long show this, but it was an absolute banger. So we've just finished watching UFC 268 from MSG. Quickly go through these prelims, and there was a hell of a lot of them. So we started with Ode Osborne getting the decision win against CJ Vergara in the flyweight. Then we got another decision, this time Melisik Bagdasarian picking up the victory against Bruno Souza. Third decision in a row, Dustin Jacare in the light heavyweight division against John Allen. Then we got our first KO of the night, Chris Barnett, with basically a spinning heel kick and then backflip. KO against Gian Vellante. Vellante, who said this was probably his last fight of his career, and what a sad way to go out for him, unfortunately. Then Ian Garry on the last of the early prelims, getting the first round knockout against Jordan Williams in the welterweight division. So going into the normal prelims, the televised ones, we started with a cracking fight in the middleweight division. Nasruddin Imavov taking on Edmund Shahbazyan. Imavov getting the second round KO, but that was very, very back and forward. Then we got Chris Curtis picking up the first round knockout against Phil Hawes. Another first round knockout in the next one was Bobby Green against Ally Quinta. And then we finished the prelims with KO. 20 seconds into the second round, Alex Pereira knocking out Andreas Michalidis.
Honestly, I'm not even shitting you. Like, I went break were on. I think I don't even know what I went to. I think I might have gone to go like get a drink or something like that, because I was pottering about. I came back in, and then obviously that was the last show, and then the show started, and I'm like, hey, what the fuck's going on with BT? They missed a fight or something. And then it were only up until like it came back on, and then like it was showing the Gaethje, started to like show the Gaethje promos and stuff, and I'm like, what's going on here? So I had to like literally rewind it back, go through adverts, and I'm like, have they missed a fight?
We're in that weird period where our clocks have gone back, but the clocks in the States haven't yet. I think it's about 2 weeks before that happens. So I think next week's an early fight anyway, but it's a couple of weeks before we get back to the 3 o'clock kickoffs for UFC. But this may well be the most stacked card we've seen in a couple of years. When you're opening a card with Justin Gaethje versus Michael Chandler, that's when you know your card is stacked. And this, before we even get into the fight, this is a fight that, if you were a UFC fan and not so much an MMA fan, you probably don't realise how much of a dream fight this is for so many people. These guys were the top dogs in their divisions in PFL and Bellator, and it's interesting that this dream fight actually finally happened in the UFC, probably when they are both at their absolute peaks. Oh my god, this fight was everything. It may be the best fight of the year for me. So damn good, so damn violent. Just Jesus Christ. Both guys are known for wanting to just batter their opponents, and they proved it in this fight. First round was, I think Michael Chandler maybe have had a poor kind of game plan, because he unloaded everything in this first round. Every shot he was throwing was designed to hurt. There was no kind of 50-50, no kind of like point scoring punches. These were all knockout punches, and he got a lot of success. There were a point in the first round where he had Justin Gaethje wobbled, but the thing is, if you don't knock out Justin Gaethje, you need a shotgun in the second round, because he's going to come back and he's going to try and hurt you. And that's really what happened. And I think the leg kicks really started to wear down on Michael Chandler, really kind of tearing his leg up. And he didn't really attempt to switch too many times. But the guy's got a massive, massive heart, never say die attitude, always kind of like trying to goad Justin Gaethje into attacking. But the thing is, Gaethje hits like a truck, an absolute truck, and he was kind of reverting back to Gaethje of his early days in UFC, where he just went forward. There was just no going back. And unfortunately for Chandler, he gassed. He ran out of energy. His shots didn't have as much power. Even his corner was saying to him, "You need to start fighting smart, not tough," which was it was the perfect way to explain how we were fighting. A great fight. None of these two come out of this fight looking any worse. But Justin Gaethje put it on Michael Chandler in the second and third round. Just absolutely banjoed him all over the octagon. Chandler was still hitting shots of his own, and the fact it went third round, went to the judges, is that's testament just to how hard these guys are, how much heart they've got. But what a great fight. Justin Gaethje picking up the points, the unanimous decision. One judge giving him all three rounds, which I think is a bit lean. I think Michael Chandler definitely took that first round, but Jesus Christ, I can't wait to rewatch this fight. It's going to be an absolute banger.
Yeah, this is one of them fights that's going to go down that you're going to be able to watch highlights of it in 10 years' time and still not be bored of it, just because of how excited you were. Now, give it when it got to the last, like, minute or so, the last round, it was basically like a stalemate. It was basically just like a standstill of, like, we know we can't do nothing here, and give Chandler his credit. He absorbed a hell of a lot of Gaethje's shots, and didn't put him down. Whereas we've saw what people have been like and acted like after they took Gaethje's shots, they don't react well, and you can see he was wearing it on his face and on the especially on the leg. That's another thing. You don't go into somewhat a leg war with Justin Gaethje. He has got the best leg kicks I have seen, without doubt, not only in the UFC, but with the whole of mixed martial arts. I guarantee that he's got better leg kicks than Douglas Lima, who's absolutely fucking ruthless with his leg kicks. But yeah, I think Chandler soon realised after that first round.
I think Edson Barbosa and Matt won't have a word.
Well, I don't know, to be honest with you, because remember, Justin Gaethje did knock Edson Barbosa clean out as well, so...
That certainly happened.
Yeah, so he's one of them, you just thought, you need to come prepared for the fight. Michael, definitely, he was prepared, but he just wasn't prepared enough to not only take the punishment, but try and give it as well. And that's a hard thing to do against Gaethje, whereas he's just dropping bombs left, right and centre, even his jab hurts you, and you just think to yourself at some point, when do I take the back step? And Chandler soon shot in for a takedown, and I know a lot of people are going to start giving him shit, but at the end of the day, think logically, it's what you're going to do. If you've got Justin Gaethje trying to like knock your fucking head off, you're going to try it. Well, I'll tell you what, I know I've got a plaque at home saying I'm an all-American wrestler. I'm not going to use it, fuck it, I'm just going to fight Gaethje. So, no, you're going to try and take him down. Mm-hmm. You're definitely going to try and take him down, but Gaethje's takedown defence is absolutely, is phenomenal. After a lot of people were like questioning it of, oh, he's just a stand-up fighter, is he one of these who's like, everyone says he's got massive takedown defence, but hasn't. I think it goes to show after today that his takedown defence is pretty much alright. But then I did also see a thing where it was like, it were only one fight ago, or two fights ago, so where Khabib made this Justin Gaethje look like an absolute amateur. Mm-hmm. So
I don't think that's a bad thing on Gaethje. I think that just shows how above everybody else Khabib was.
Well, that's it. He basically, this is what I mean. What I meant by that is, with Gaethje having takedown defense, yeah, Khabib could take you down with ease. Mm-hmm. So people, that's where the rumors like started to come from, where he clearly didn't have this good takedown defense and that lot. But who has a good takedown defense against Khabib?
Exactly. So
against Michael Chandler, who's got an All-American plaque on his wall for wrestling, and he found it an hard time to take Gaethje down. That's a scary fight, and the outcome of the fight is whoever won that, number one contender. And I know Dana White didn't say physically, but our personal opinion, I think it should be whether it the champion, depending on how the.
I mean, again, it's hard to. I understand your point, and just when you beat someone like Michael Chandler, that should automatically throw you in the mix. And I love me some Justin Gaethje, but Islam Makhachev is a fucking animal.
Yeah, well, he wants to go. Is he in lightweight or is he in welterweight?
He fought like the other, like last week.
In lightweight, I'm sure he's in welterweight though.
No, he's lightweight. Islam Makhachev beat Dan Hooker. Everybody's been ducking him for like the last 3 years, and he said, "Look, people want to keep getting these title shots and keep making good business, and I want to take the title and I want to hold it for a long, long time."
I could understand, but what, he's only not long just broke into the top 10.
Not through his own doing though. Through everybody being absolutely terrified of fighting him.
I understand that, but then if you. When you speak about the champion rank 1 to 3, they're going to fight him if they need to fight him to get to that spot, whereas Gaethje's fought for the spot that he's at now, and he's, by rights, he's number one. He is rank what, 2? Or rank 1?
Gaethje was rank 1 going into this fight. Chandler was, I think, 5th. Makhachev is like rank 3, I think.
Oh, so then again, it's not too bad. Now, obviously, depending on how the fight works out between Dustin and Oliveira, then he could die, or spectacular, he could have a fucking double knockout or something, you never know, and then fucking and then running back. So, but yeah, depending on how that goes out. But yeah, whether it be, that'd be a classic fight with Islam and Gaethje if he wasn't to get the title. Match.
Yeah, absolutely. So after that, we go into what sadly is the piss break match of the main card, and that's bad to say because it was actually a really good match as well. All this card was absolutely stacked. So we had Shane Burgos taking on Billy Quarantillo. I feel for Billy in this fight. I thought he was never given a real chance, especially with Shane Burgos being an elite level boxer and really decent on the ground. Not many people give Billy a fighting chance in this, but one thing he's proved over his last few fights in the UFC is he only needs to be in that octagon to create his own chances. And I think in the first round he held his own. He did well landing some shots. He ended up making Burgos bleed. We saw some big overhand rights. We saw Quarantillo doing well to defend against the takedown. He was willing to stand in the pocket and land some big shots. But then Burgos' boxing skill showed up when he got the quick punch that got the knockdown to one knee. Now I think a lot of that is to do with the octagon floor, and I'm sure we'll get into that over the next couple of rounds because it started to get worse and worse and worse. But yeah, I thought the first round Billy really was kind of proving the doubters wrong. Coming out into the second round, it was very, very different fight. Burgos really started loading up with those big shots. Still had a couple of well-timed overhand rights and there was a good leg kick which took Quarantillo down. But overall in the second round we could see that Burgos was starting to really lean on his boxing skill. Coming out for the third, and it looked like that Quarantillo may have had drop foot. Unfortunately, I think he's had a recurring knee injury that I think it stopped him getting signed from the UFC in the first place, and it were a few years after that that he was able to actually get into the UFC. But it's a kind of reoccurring injury that he's had, and that really stunted him for the third round. again, kind of like Chandler, heart of gold, and really kind of showing the effort to work through that. I mean, we've seen fighters who have literally just give up after getting drop foot in a fight because it's so hard to deal with. But he was Billy was able to keep fighting, but just took a hell of a lot of punishment in that third round. Burgos coming away with the unanimous 29-28 victory.
And it were a fair decision as well, even though Billy were able to throw up some stuff where it were, I think he had Burgos' leg in a single leg, and then he were a trip, and then tried to get him into like an ankle lock submission. But give it to both of them, there was a lot of tripping, and people in mixed martial arts will know what I'm on about. By that, where you don't see it a lot in actual UFC, you see it a lot in Muay Thai, where you see a leg sweeping, should I say, tripping. A lot of people might know it better than that. This were a technical fight, but Billy, after getting his contract from Dana White's Contender Series, and then coming through the show, this was his proper test in the UFC, even though he's fought a couple of other times, I think it was like 3 or 4 times in the UFC, the step up in level of not only just name value, but actual skill set, because Shane Burgos has been in there with some good fighters, and he's lost to some good fighters, which means that he's been put in there with challenges himself. So if you want to step up that ladder, you put yourself in a challenge with Shane Burgos. And like you said, Burgos were just, with his boxing, it was just a bit too much of him. I think with his strength-wise, even though they're in the same weight class, I think when it comes to actually with the way they built, I think the only reason they're in the same weight class is obviously Billy's probably a little bit taller, built slimmer but longer, and Burgos is just muscle. So after the first round, he basically was just like a tank storming through. And Billy was just sort of weathering the storm, and with his absolute heart of a lion, ends up getting it to a decision. And I thought, I think about halfway through round two, or just at the end of it, I thought ref were going to stop it at some point. But I'm like, shit, letting this go another round. Fucking crack on. I'm excited. Yeah. But yeah, somewhat what they basically were promoting the fight on this stack card, it was a decent fight.
It really, really was. And Burgos back in the win column. I think he's lost his last couple, something like that. I think he hasn't won in the UFC since, 2018, 2019, something like that. So he definitely needed a win coming out of that. Going into the middle of the card, and the only actual finish of the main card, Frankie Edgar versus Marlon Vera, Chico Vera. There was seemed to be a hell of a lot of bad blood in this fight. Edgar started pretty fresh, shoots for the takedown straight away. That gets stuffed, but Edgar's able to fire off quite a few decent shots. He eventually does get that takedown though, and is almost gets himself into trouble with the takedown. Vera tries for the guillotine, but Edgar, being wily and a veteran, is able to pop his head out. Then once it gets back to the feet, Edgar's throwing some big shots. The one thing that Vera had, which I thought would finish the fight, was those up kicks. Jesus Christ, Frankie was going for the takedown or trying to control on the ground, Vera threw up kicks like he was riding a bike, and a few of them landed clean. But obviously, Frank Edgar's got a chin of granite, which will get tested later on in the fight. But I thought that was a very bright first round for Frank Edgar. I think Vera had a better second round, came out, still ended up, was able to be took down pretty easily, but he was able to get back on his feet pretty quick. Landed a sneaky knee, certainly was the more fresher in the second round. I think Edgar, with his age, he's starting to, maybe the gas tank doesn't last as long as it used to do. We see Vera landing with a jump knee, which kind of like shook the cobwebs of Frankie Edgar. The knee was a vital weapon for Vera, especially in the second round. But one thing I didn't like was him flipping off Frank Edgar at the end of the second. I thought that was very, very disrespectful. I think he has a he's got a reputation for being a bit of a classless and a bit of a clown, and he certainly didn't do anything any favours to change that. Third round though is when Vera kind of like takes over this fight, ends up scoring the knockout win. His work leading up to that though was really good, really powerful. The front kicks was digging into Frankie Edgar. You could tell was really getting tired now, very heavily breathing. And the finish comes with the patented Anderson Silva up kick. This may be the cleanest one that I've seen in a long, long time though. The toes right under the chin of Frank Edgar. Edgar sits straight down, almost in slow motion. Ref stops it. Edgar is kind of like arguing with the ref, saying that it shouldn't have been a stop, but he was out. Yeah, he couldn't even stand up afterwards. Good victory for Marlon Vera. He needs to calm that kind of bad attitude off though, but yeah, great victory, absolutely great victory.
Yeah, definitely a great victory for him, especially a win over Frankie Edgar. Now, Frankie Edgar, with him being a 40-year-old and a veteran in the sport, he's one of them fighters now, especially at his age, where, fair enough, if you make a mistake and he has to work hard to capitalise, he's probably not going to do it, but he's gonna probably faint, or he's gonna do something to show you like, oh, I could have got you there. But then if you make a mistake that he definitely knows that he can capitalize on without using hardly any effort, he's gonna do it. And that's what Marvin Vera had to try and like sort of watch out for in this fight. That's why he had to sort of switch up his angles, and in a way with the kicks, throwing them body kicks or leg kicks or whatever, Frankie Edgar's fast enough to where he can catch that and take you down, and he were able to do that to obviously Vera. And as soon as when they were on the ground, Frankie Edgar's got such good wrestling that he's top position and top pressure that he can just keep control. Even because in wrestling they always go like position over submission. You hold on to your position and you keep trying to work and try and get into a better one, and you can just see Marlon Vera, he was just somewhat trying to hold on and then kick off from the hips and then just absolutely flail his like legs about just to try and get some distance away so he can stand up. Mm-hmm. But yeah, going into that third round, and as soon as he saw the opening, now this is where from a fighter's point of view you can somewhat look at it and go, right, that's his weakness, because just off the top of my head, and I haven't even watched this yet, and I'm actually going to do this after when we finish recording, but I think Frank Edgar's weakness is stuff that's coming from just beneath the eyesight view, because Brian Ortega knocked him out with the uppercut, he didn't see it. Marlon Vera just knocked him out with basically a front kick that he didn't see it, and a couple of other times that he's been hurt, it's always been from like the uppercut position where it comes from the front and he doesn't see it, because yeah, as a wrestler your hands are somewhat in a way you're standing like square on, it's not sideways or all that, you're standing square on, so if something's coming from up, your hands basically just got dropped, both of them just drop down like you're about to do a sprawl or something, and before you know it they've got through his guard, and it happened to that. And obviously being 40-year-old, it's pointless me saying that's what he needs to go and work on, because but fucking 40-year-old is going to tell me to fuck off. Like, he's a lightweight champion. Like, he's going to say to me, gosh, you don't know fuck all what you're about. But yeah, that's what, in my personal opinion, that's what the weakness is in his last couple of fights. And it's just, respect where respect is due. He were able to, throughout these years, he's been able to hold his own. And for 40 years old, he still looks like he's gonna carry on. But Marvin Vera, where do you, in this bantamweight, especially a win like that, and with everything that's going on, I think you think he needs to fight Sugar or Mali again?
Yeah, I think before this year, where he's picked up a couple of wins in a row, he was actually, he lost three in a row to Song Yadong, then Sugar O'Malley, and then Jose Aldo. So he was on the verge of probably getting cut. Mm. So to come back and do this to a legend and a former champion, it's certainly good going for him. Whether O'Malley will accept that fight, because as we all know, he's definitely in it for the money rather than climbing the ladder. He's made that abundantly clear. So we'll see. But yeah, I'd like to see that fight run back, I think.
And this is, and what the commentary did get it wrong, this is Trevor Whitman's second fight. Obviously, we had Justin Gaethje, then Marlon Vera. They left him out. It's not all about fucking Usman, Rose and Justin. He's on their team at all. He were in his corner.
Hi, I'm also here. Yeah,
just auto-bombing, just tagging on at the end, like, right?
So let's get into the co-main event, the first of the two title fights, both rematches. Both went the distance and both were fucking brilliant fights. Rose Thug Namajunas taking on Weili Zhang. This is, I mean, you could call this result controversial, to be fair. I mean, yeah, it was a really, really good fight. Rose obviously has that range advantage, so it was always, the onus was always on Weili Zhang to get in the pocket and make contact without trying to get hit too much by Rose. And I think for the first few rounds, she did really well at doing that. And she also was good at getting the takedowns. I think she ended up with maybe 6 takedowns all the way through the fight, which against someone with the strength of Rose is very, very, something to be very, very proud of. But for me, I think there may be a little bit of bias in the referee, and I thought that Rose looked very nervy in the first round. Wasn't throwing massive amounts of combinations, and I think the biggest factor, especially in the first few rounds, was how slippy the octagon floor was.
Because that was weird, there was so many fighters were slipping tonight. I've seen it before, but I've never seen throughout the full card, like they're in a fight, at least one of the fighters slipping somewhere on the canvas.
It was apparently it's to do with the amount of sponsors on the canvas.
Fucking take them off then.
It's yeah.
You don't want them on your fighter shorts, or all that. You don't want it to look like NASCAR, but you don't mind your octagon looking like NASCAR.
It's that vinyl though, and with the canvas being material, the changing like surfaces made a slip, and I think
especially when vinyl gets fucking wet from sweating that.
Yeah, and I think Weili Zhang is the biggest loser of that, because she slipped in this fight quite a few times, and how the angle that the judges see it from, if they see a shot being thrown at the same time, it looks like a knockdown.
Well, not even that. I agree with what he's saying. It does look like a knockdown. But even the first time she slipped, and it Rose didn't even throw a punch. But it's just because the way the camera were on Rose, and she was basically stood in front of Weili Zhang, and Weili Zhang just basically went down. It looked like fucking Rose's throat. Even the commentary were like, "What the fuck did Rose just throw then?"
Yeah, exactly.
And they had to like look back, and they were like, "Oh, she didn't throw anything. She literally just slipped."
Yeah, I totally agree, and I think Weili is the person who suffered the most from that, because unfortunately she wasn't able to finish Rose, and she needed to finish Rose. She needed to rubber stamp the fact that she was going in as challenger. Rose was the defending champion. She, I thought the first couple of rounds Rose was very, very nervous. You could tell she's made a kind of mantra out of this, I'm the best thing, that everyone picked upon in the last fight, to the point where all she was doing was chanting it all the way through, like being introduced in the fight.
I think that's more like the mental part of her, obviously, because it's not like she's had the best times with trying to get the belt and stuff like that. And so I think that's more of just a case of saying that to yourself, getting yourself mentally psyched up to, you know, like it's not probably the worst thing in the world being the champion and being the best.
No, absolutely not. But going through the fight, I think that for the first, for me personally, I don't know if I will obviously hear Carlos's opinion in a second, but for me, I thought that Weili Zhang dominated for the first three rounds. I think that she went into an easy three-round lead. Her shots were landing more. The takedowns were really, really effective. The issue was that she slipped so many times, and Rose was able to capitalise on that so many times. Going into the fourth, I thought that Rose was... That's when she turned up the pace. I thought that she started to find her range a lot better. She was able to stuff more of the takedowns, get takedowns of her own, get better control, and the way she was took down, the way she was able to roll with the takedown and get into top position and really kind of score points with the judges that way. Thought that she really started to blossom. Pun intended. And then the fifth round, Carlos and I, obviously we speak during the fight, and he said exactly what I was thinking, that when she went for a takedown very, very early on in the fight, that was to score points, to keep Weili Zhang down and to win the fight, because it's kind of the recency bias. The judges will always kind of look at what's happening right now rather than comparing it to what's happened all the way through the fight. And I think the way she kept Weili Zhang down and got in the last two rounds, I think she got like 7 minutes of ground control against someone with the wrestling skill of Weili Zhang, and the strength more than anything of Weili Zhang, to be able to keep her down and keep her grounded and frustrated. That's testament to just how good of a fighter Rose Namajunas is. But saying all that, I think she can be count herself very, very lucky that she's walked away with this belt. I think the partisan crowd basically booing the hell out of Weili Zhang, that may have convinced the judges more than anything, because they obviously will react more to a shot from Rose than they will from Weili. But it was a great fight to watch. It will probably go down as one of the best women's strawweight fights. And this is in a division where we've had Joanna and Weili Zhang. So this is a brilliant, brilliant fight. Two brilliant fighters. And Rose keeps the title by the skin of her teeth.
Definitely by the skin of the teeth. Even I was sat there watching this thinking to myself, like, shit, this is so close. Like, I was finding it hard to judge, and I'm not a proper judge, so I can only imagine how they found it and how stressful it were. Because going after that fourth round, it's like, this is anyone's fucking fight. This has literally gone, this has gone anywhere. Like, through when it's gone from striking, yeah, fair enough. You had Rose, who has like a perfect 1-2-1 hook and leg kick, and then you've got Weili Zhang. When Rose does go in and she stays in too quick and don't move out the way, she drops bombs on her, because that's all she can do, because she ain't got the length to somewhat get the combinations off and close distance. So when Rose's camp was saying to her, let her come to you, Weili Zhang, her and her coaches already knew that's what they were wanting for her to come to her, because they don't want to go to Weili Zhang, they're going to get cracked with fucking power shots. So it were basically back and forth on the feet. It got into the later rounds when obviously fatigue and that started to set in, and we know Rose has got amazing stamina and she can go five rounds constantly if she needed to. Weili Zhang, she carries a lot more muscle mass than Rose Namajunas. So that muscle mass is going to require more blood and more oxygen for her to just keep working, and her ATP levels aren't going to be able to replenish as fast as what she needs them to in order to keep up with the pace as what Rose is going to be able to put out to her. So as soon as it basically got on the ground and Rose were able to just hold her down, and it's not even just about holding her down, it's putting the forearm on the neck, putting your chest into their, putting your head into their chest, pushing down on the hips, and you're making it harder for them to breathe. And every time they're moving, they're having to work just to move a bit. So they're already having to exhale oxygen to basically move. And before you know it, they're already tired just from trying to move out of positions, just to try and find a way to stand up. So when they're on the feet, it makes it easier for you. But Wei Li Zhang is just an absolute animal. She were eating some of Rose's shots, and again, I think Rose were a bit silly not basically getting out in time, because she got cracked a fair couple of times, and I'm like, shit, it's over here. She's won it. Wei Li Zhang won it here. But yeah, this I can honestly say though, from basically the corners that they'll basically get Trevor Whitman, he'll get a credit from this. That's fair enough. He's our head coach. Pat Barry, her boyfriend though, Jesus Christ, like, not only is it the pressure that it's your girlfriend, the pressure that it's Rosemary Nunes, who's a massive name, the pressure that it's a title fight, and the pressure that it's your girlfriend's title that she's defending, and then you're also a coach in a corner. That's the five things that's already running through his mind, yeah. And he's got a coach her, and he was giving perfect exact, even when he was saying to her, like, breathe in, make sure you're the first, let her come to you in that lot. Don't save the kicks up until you know that they're going to land. That's good advice to a fighter that is in that position where it's all that pressure is around you, and then still having the time in that 30, 60 second break window to go, Trevor, we got all to say. And that's a decent coach there. So I think give him like props where like props is due.
Yeah, I totally agree. And that's not me kind of bagging on Rose. I absolutely think she's amazing. The one kind of flaw in her MMA game, and it's not even anything to do with the octagon, it's the wilting under the media pressure. We've seen that before. But I'm glad that this rivalry is over.
Oh, I don't think it's over. I think they're gonna. I think this will. These two will fight. Wei Li Zhang, one or two wins, I reckon.
Yeah,
two.
But it'll just be cool to see Rose go up against.
But who the fuck does she go up against? Yep. Who else does she? Who's she fight?
I mean, going through her last six fights, she fought Joanna. Then she fought Jessica Andrade, and then she's fought Wei Li Zhang. Who is she going to fight for the next two fights? Marina Rodriguez, maybe.
I mean, I'm not going to lie, they're probably going to fucking look at Valentina versus Rose, probably, aren't they?
Interesting. We shall certainly see. Well, can Valentina drop that weight, do you think?
I reckon so.
I think Valentina's in that weird kind of middle position where she could be considered the main contender for the strawweight, but then she could also be considered the main contender for the bantamweight. And it all just depends on which way she wants to go, I suppose.
That's it, it's all up in thin air at the minute.
Yeah. So let's get into the main event and the most amount of bad blood. Colby Covington coming out to Kurt Angle's music just pops
that.
Me up every single time. Yeah, the fans were probably the most two-faced fans I've ever heard, because they started this fight saying "fuck you, Colby." At the end of the fight, they were chanting his name. They absolutely loved him. And do you know what? I don't blame him, because he gave his absolute all in this fight.
I think he's earned a lot of fans after this fight.
Yeah, I mean, I don't agree with his politics. I don't agree with him and Joe Rogan taking horse tranquilizers to combat COVID. All that silly bullshit. But he sells himself as a character. And he's made himself a bigger star than he would have.
Well,
who else
in mixed martial arts has headlined Madison Square Garden to the theme tune of Kurt Angle and actually got the audience without participation to chant "you suck"? They already knew exactly what to do.
Yeah.
And you're already a character there.
Yeah, absolutely. And he did the impossible in this fight and ended up taking down Kamaru Usman.
No. It actually, check the records, it didn't actually class as a takedown. Not only, because in what Daniel Cormier was saying, I agree with him, in wrestling, fair enough, if both knees are on the mat, they will class that as a takedown. But in mixed martial arts, it goes off actual position, control and time.
Okay.
He weren't really in a good position to say you took him down.
No,
he had him back, and he didn't even have him down on the back for any seconds at all. He were on his knees for a split second before he were back up. So he's still got 100% takedown defense as Kamaru Usman.
Well, we'll see if that record sticks. I'll be keeping my eyes closely on that record. But going through the first two rounds, I thought that this was going to end pretty early. There's been a lot of talk about this being the new kind of generation of Usman, the kind of that evolution, and he showed a hell of a lot of that in the first two rounds, landing big shots, scoring his own ground game, but he obviously was able to handle Colby Covington's shots in the first fight. And knew there wasn't a big threat there in terms of getting knocked out, so he was willing to definitely stand and trade with him. Colby was swinging very wildly as he is known to do, but Usman definitely controlled the first round. A lot of the same in the second round. Mixed it up with kicks to the stomach, body shots, punches to the face, to the point where Colby was bleeding off his cheek. Maybe going for another jawbreaker, which Colby is denying actually happened, even though we've all seen the X-rays, Colby, where your jaw was
zero.
Yeah.
Zero for 11 takedowns.
Is that what they've got it for? Is that what the record says?
Fair play.
He's very proud of that no takedowns record. But in the third round, Colby started coming back to life, landed some big shots, was able to kind of worry Usman to the point where he was almost kind of rocking Usman with the shots. Usman landing some decent ones of his own, but Colby was connecting with more combinations, fighting a hell of a lot smarter. The round ends when with Covington in the dominant position, pushing Usman up against the fence. Fourth round, again, could easily say that went to Colby Covington again, landing some big shots from the kickoff. Took a few body kicks, and the kind of combinations that he was throwing though, really landing like both sides of Kamaru Usman's temple. So he was landing some big heavy shots, again wobbled him in this round, not to the point where you were worried that Usman was going down, but if Colby could have capitalized and landed some more combinations, he could have done some real damage in this fight. Going into the end of the round though, that's when it started getting really exciting, where they were both face to face, squaring off just as the round ended. Just such an exciting fight. Fifth round, that's when the championship class shone through. Usman knew he needed to kind of put this fight to bed. And was able to do so. Still took some big shots though. He ended up getting hit with a decent uppercut that saw him his head rock back a little bit. Again, we had that issue with the takedown. Is it a takedown? Is it not? At the end of the day, it doesn't really matter, because Usman was able to control the fire, landed a good head kick. The issue with an eye poke, I think with about 40 seconds left, and again, when Dan Mergnotta is involved in an eye poke, that motherfucker needs to learn to keep his mouth shut. This is the second time, and who was it he was coaching before?
His problem
Sergey Spivak.
Yeah, his problem is he don't want the fighters to say, I can't fucking see. Yeah. He loves to see a scrap.
He did exactly the same thing with Sergey Spivak, saying, oh, you've only got so long of the fight to go. Are you sure you want to not carry on? I can't really tell you what to say, but definitely don't say you can't see how you are. I'm going to get a doctor in. Basically, Dan, shut your mouth. But the fight restarts. We don't see much more action after that. A head kick from Usman is blocked. But what we do see, and it's something that I was hoping we'd get after this fight, the sign of mutual respect between the two.
The actual real Colby, if people were to actually go back 7 to 8 years and look up videos of Colby about this persona, you'd see that you see the real sort of Colby Covington sometimes vaguely on camera.
Yeah.
And that after the fight straight away, as soon as he squared up, and I thought, hey, fucking hell, there's going to be another scrap here, they're going to scrap again. And then they
And he was saying it's just character work, it's making money, which it is at the end of the day. He's learned from Conor McGregor that to make money, to be a big star, you don't necessarily need to win or lose fights.
Not only that,
character.
And not only that, a lot of people, I don't think a lot of people really know Dan Lambert's background. Like, fair enough, he were in mixed martial arts, but he's always been in professional wrestling when it comes to...
He's in it now.
Well, yeah.
With AEW.
He's always been around, even when WCW or something like that. Mm-hmm. Even when it was around back then, he had his hand in that pie. So he knows all about these gimmicks and personas and storylines that sort of get writ up. And it was Colby who basically got the idea from him when he said to Colby, listen, the UFC are going to cut you because you're a boring fighter, because all you do is wrestle. You're a good wrestler, you're a brilliant wrestler, you win your fights, but they're not looking for someone who's going to decision. That's why they hate Tyrone Woodley. That's why they don't want him as champ. So you need to do something differently. Now, you're not just going to become a fucking world-class striker overnight. So what does... If you've got Dan Lambert there, who's already got these resources behind him, you're going to do a good businessman, which Colby Covington is, and you're going to go, Dan, what sort of persona can I get off? Well, you're a sort of white hillbilly guy. Put MAGA. A persona on like you're a backing Trump.
MAGA, yeah.
Yeah. So, and that it worked perfectly for him. Absolutely perfectly.
It was perfect timing that came along for him, because like you said, as a fighter, he's elite level. As a character, there was nothing there. And then Trump became president, he was able to kind of like hitch his character to that bandwagon, and it's absolutely worked for him. He's become must-see television, and it's worked. So fair play to him for that, but also fair play to him showing respect to Usman. The issue now for Usman is, who the fuck is next?
I think we all know who's next for that, but before we do say who's next for that, Colby is... The one thing about Colby in this fight is... I am impressed with that. Fair enough, he still took a good couple of cracks. There was about 6 or 7 times where he rocked Usman. Mm-hmm. He didn't get no knockdowns because he wasn't able to capitalise, and actually after that third punch, just drop another 2 or 3, even if they weren't hard, just keep that pressure going. But I don't think his body could withstand it, because the power that Usman's got behind his hands, that as soon as Colby were hurting him, and Usman landed that one shot, Colby straight away in his mind were like, fuck's sake, that hurt. Reset. And he was able to reset perfectly in this fight. He just wasn't able to capitalise on that movement. But Usman, working with, obviously going, one of Henry Hoover's students, teaching him striking from being a wrestler, and then now working with Trevor Whitman and basically honing his striking skills and getting that jab, which is like a piston. We say it constantly when he farts. But the one thing I think I definitely know Trevor's going to work on, because if I seen it, world-class coaches are definitely going to see it, and that's when Usman gets too excited and he physically just goes at a 90-degree angle and he's looking at the floor at this point and he's not even looking at his opponent. And that's where Colby was able to actually hit him a lot more, where he was basically getting a bit over, like, a bit wild, and he was doing like a ducking and diving like he thought he was Mike Tyson, and he was just looking at the floor. And Colby were able to just capitalise on that, because if you're not looking at your opponent, you're not knowing what your opponent's doing.
No.
If you're not looking at shots, you don't know what you're going to get hit with. And that's what... were giving him trouble most majority of the times, and that were going into the later on into the rounds. And the one thing I saw on a group on either Facebook or Twitter of someone saying, like, after this fight, Colby Covington's corner's shit as fuck, needs to get rid of him. What are you on about? No, they not. Like, they're absolutely... He left American Top Team to basically get a bit more like a bit more of a personalised environment where it's just him and his coaches, and that works perfectly.
Plus the issues he had with Tyrone Woodley.
Oh yeah, well, the handful of fucking hundreds of people who train American Top Team, because it's absolutely massive. AKA Dan Lambert is a good businessman. Mm-hmm. That's why he's been around for fucking absolute 20, 30 years doing different businesses. But yeah, his team's absolutely perfect, and bar from his team giving him the perfect advice, and from the very first round in that first break saying to him, Colby, stick to the fucking game, we've got a game plan, stick to it, that already there is a world class coach. to basically have the bollocks to say to your father, stick to a game plan that we set in stock. Don't just go off and do your own thing. Stick to the game plan. Yeah, fair enough, he didn't win the fight, but he's just took Kamaru fucking Usman to decision without getting knocked out. Like, you know, the last two fucking opponents of Kamaru Usman, he's finished, and Colby was one of them. So he knows more than anyone how this fight could have possibly gone.
He beat, he knocked out Gilbert Burns and Jorge Masvidal, didn't he? Since Colby Covington.
Oh shit, well yeah, that's three. And Colby's one of them, so he knows exactly basically how that fight could have gone down. And with his coaches basically sticking to that game plan, and I think that was his game plan. Try and get Usman to basically fucking blow his load in the first and second round, and then because Colby Covington is a cardio machine, his endurance can last for days.
Yeah.
And I understand that after taking a bit of a beating, it's going to take it out of you, but I do personally believe that Colby and his team thought that he would have enough endurance after basically taking 10 minutes of what potentially could get called punishment, and then 15 minutes turning that fight around and basically putting all the pressure on Usman, because we've seen it in a couple of fights before where Usman sort of started to fade off later on in the rounds, but now with this new Usman 2.0, I don't think it's as easy as that. The only other thing that was working for him is the weakness that Colby was able to capitalise on, and that was from his coach's advice. As Colby, his head's going down, he's looking at the floor, he's not looking at you.
That's your time to strike.
He started doing it and it worked for him.
Yep.
Colby, what are you doing? After that fourth strike, you need to throw two more, you hurt him, you need to finish it off. And he couldn't do it. So is that shit coach, or is that just a fighter's mentality of going, I've done what I can, I need to back off? Coaches are giving you the perfect, coaches are giving you the advice what you need to do, but it's the fighter that needs to do it. Yeah. And Colby couldn't do that because the better man tonight was the person who walked home with the belt, and that's Usman.
But Colby certainly can look back at this fight and say, I improved on the first fight.
There's a trilogy coming down the line somewhere. Yeah,
definitely. I mean, somewhere. Usman's getting to the point where he's nearly cleaned out the division.
I'd say two.
I think there's someone who's been overlooked for quite a while in the UFC. Someone who has floated in the welterweights, Vicente Luque. I think the guy, he's beat Michael Chiesa and Tyron Woodley in his last two fights by submission, but the guy is Hamzat. We all know Hamzat is the next guy to take on Usman.
Yeah, no, I didn't want to say it, but as soon as the media and that lot started asking him when they were literally doing the press conference, he had a stiffy underneath that podium. He didn't see it, but his dick was rock solid.
Wow. But that fight, it'll be absolutely brilliant. And it'll be the biggest test for Hamzat that we've seen so far. I mean, he's easily handled all his opponents so far, to the point where he was carrying Li Jiangling to Dana to say, look,
get
give
off
me
your
the
phone. Tell him to get off his phone. Get off your phone. Who do you think you are, watching that phone when you should be watching me kick fuck out of Jiang Li? What are you doing?
Yeah, I'm sure that'll be coming up very, very soon. But next week we have Max Holloway back in the main event against Yair Rodriguez, trying to force his way back into featherweight title contention. Ben Rothwell on his resurgence in his career against Marco Ruggiero de Lima, and Felicia Spencer trying to get back in the win column against Leah Letson. So that's an interesting card as well. So that'll be what we'll be covering next week here on Five Rounds. Hopefully it'll line up so that Carlos can make three appearances in a row, do a Hamzat Chimaev before he ends up getting COVID and being out for a year. But
less than 19 days as well. I think it's 21 days.
But that's all from us here at Five Rounds for this week. Definitely check out the rest of the content from the amazing networks that we are part of here at Radio Techers, at Chairshot, and of course at Visionaries Global Media. Follow Carlos here at Kirby_Carlos. I'm sure you're going to be seeing more content from him in regards of fighting and training at Black Knights, especially with with what's coming up. Follow me on Twitter at PodfatherMags, where I'm now officially a legal lord. So refer to me as Sir when you message me.
If you don't take it piss, I've literally sort of certificate.
It's legit. I am Lord Mags. But yeah, thank you all for listening, and that is the end.
Adios, amigos.
Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment. Visionaries Global Media, envisioning excellence on a global scale.